From the Land Grant University in Urbana-Champaign, Illinois, this is the Closing Mark Report. It's the 29th day of September 2008. I'm Todd Gleason. In a few moments, we'll talk about the commodity markets with Kurt Kimmel. He's the senior grains analyst at Bates Commodities in Normal, Illinois. And later in the half hour, we'll discuss the cash grain market with the folks at the Andersons right here in Champaign County. Along the way, during the first half hour of this program, we'll take up the topic of farm safety. You probably already know this, but farming is the nation's most dangerous job. And then, on most of these radio stations, during the second half hour of the program, the Harvest Hour, Dr. Daryl Ray of the Agricultural Policy Analysis Center in Knoxville, Tennessee, will join us. He'll help us wade through some of the Farm Bill implementation problems that have come along with a new law that the president didn't want in the first place. And it will all happen during this Monday edition of the Closing Market Report. The Closing Market Report is a production of WILL. It's public radio from the Urbana-Champaign campus of the University of Illinois.
The Closing Market Report is made possible in part by a grant from Paul Cooley of ADM Investor Services in Oakland, Illinois, a full-service commodities firm with two toll-free lines. In Illinois, 800-252-2013. In Indiana, 800-637-3123. Or email to cooley@admworld.com.
In Chicago, on this Monday afternoon, futures finished the day like this. The nearby contracts in the wheat pit finished lower, down 48 cents at $6.68 for the December. March at $6.89, down 48. And the May futures, 47.5 cents lower at $7.03.5. December corn, $5.13, down 30. The March at $5.31, down the limit, 30 lower. May futures at $5.42.5, down the limit, 30 lower. And July, down the limit at 552.5 for July 09 corn, down 30 cents. November soybeans, $10.94, down the 70-cent limit. January at $11.10.5, down 70. And the March at $11.24.25, down 70 cents. May soybeans, $11.37, down 70 cents. October bean meal, $2.95.70, down $19.30. October bean oil, $44.70, down $2.70. October live cattle futures, $98 and a nickel, $2.90 lower on the afternoon. December futures there at $99.87.5, down $2.92.5. October feeder cattle at $102.80, down $3. November at $102.57 and one half, down $3 as well. October lean hog, $68.55, down $1.07.5, and December futures at $65.05. down a dollar even. Again, let me recap that. October live cattle futures, $98 and a nickel, down $2.90. You're listening to the Closing Market Report. Here's what the outside markets look like at this hour. The Dow Jones Industrial Average now stands 532 points lower at 10,610. November crude oil futures down $7.44 a barrel, trading below $100 at $99.45. December is at $97 and a nickel, down $9.13. Ethanol trading at $2.17, 0.8 cents lower. Natural gas at $7.18 and 0.4 cents, down 44 and 0.4 cents. The RBOB gasoline at $2.37 and 0.5 cents, down 28 and 0.9 cents. And the October heating oil, that's diesel fuel, 24 and 0.5 cents lower at $2.74 and 0.9 cents. October propane just about unchanged at $1.53 and a half. And the October gold futures are up $5.80 at this hour, or rather up $5.30 at this hour at $888.20. The U.S. dollar at 77.47 is up 0.51. The CRB index at 346.38, down 18. The Goldman Sachs at 606.46, down 50.56. And once again, the Dow Jones Industrial Average, this is a 15-minute delayed quote, down 545 points now at 10,592. Here's what the weather forecast for the two-state region looks like at this hour. Our own Ed Kieser says in Illinois tonight it'll be mostly cloudy, a few scattered showers during the evening, clear overnight. Tomorrow, mix of cloud and sunshine, breezy and cooler, a chance of a few showers in northern Indiana. Highs tomorrow from the 60s in northern Illinois to 70s in the south. Cooler weather arriving. High temps on Wednesday expected to be mostly in the 50s and the 60s, and in the 60s and the 70s on Thursday. Lows Wednesday, Thursday, and Friday mornings will mostly be in the 40s. In a few of the normally colder spots in the north, a few lows in the mid to upper 30s are possible. No widespread frost or freeze is expected.
Todd Gleason's services are made available to WILL by University of Illinois Extension.
Agricultural programming is made possible by Lernard Seed Service, an independent dealer providing DeKalb and Asgro seed products, including Asgro's new Roundup Ready 2-yield soybeans. Lernard Seed Service provides services to help customers in East Central Illinois maximize profits. 217-497-2270.
You're listening to the Closing Market Report on a Monday afternoon. Time to talk with Kurt Kimmel. He's with Bates Commodities out of Normal, Illinois. Joins us every Monday. It always seems like we have something fun to talk about with you on a Monday. Kurt, starts the work week, and this week's no different.
Boy, hopefully this week will start to improve from here on out, but financial concerns weighed heavily on the agricultural side of the equation here, Todd.
I read something from the wire service from DTN that suggested that despite the heavy losses, in fact, the losses that pushed the market into limit loss moves for both corn and soybeans and locked limit down, that there really wasn't a lot of selling below that. Can you see that in the depth charts and what the market looked like in its synthetic?
Well, when you look at the overall contracts in corn and beans for sale limit down, it's just a few thousand contracts. It wasn't like we had 20, 30, 40,000 for sale. I know in the past we've had huge pools for sale, and the market opened steady lower than was able to bounce in the past. I don't know if this is a sign we'll just gap lower and keep going lower or not, but from a bullish point of view or the positive point of view, we didn't have a whole bunch saying, get me out, get me out. And when you look at the synthetics, they were calling beans down another 6 cents, starting out according to the option trade, and corn just a couple cents lower, too. So hopefully we've seen the liquidation occur that gets the trade to where they want to be, but they'll continue to monitor the outside situation to look for some price direction. Part of this was mainly on the financial bailout, but we got to remember it was month-end, end of the quarter. And also, too, there are some ideas. We saw some liquidation from Wachovia for going merging with Citicorp. That could have produced some of the selling, too, Todd.
So a lot of selling happening, but not the kind of panic selling that you might be fearful of if the market was really going to collapse.
Well, it's panic. I mean, down 30 and down 70, that's a bunch. You know, there was some get-me-out type of mentality taking place. But as far as panic mode, you know, if we'd had, 30, 40, 50,000 contracts of beans to sell and 100,000 contracts of corn to sell, that would be panic because the market would not be able to absorb that type of selling pressure. So, you know, if the market wants to go lower here, hopefully it'll be in an orderly fashion where it gives the opportunity for people to get out that wants to get out.
Some of this was predicated on the House of Representatives' failure to pass the $700 billion bailout that Paulson would like and the Bush administration would have liked him to do. But prior to that, which didn't happen till late in the session, futures were lower, and they started off the get-go on the lower this morning, didn't they?
Yeah, we followed overnight trade and opened lower and a little bit lower than that. Then we were limit down there mid-morning, and we were able to bounce for a while.
Right.
And trade, and as you said, that once the Dow dropped about 700, news of the failure there, then we went to back down limit. And that's just how sensitive the marketplace is going to be to this so-called outside news, because it's a very serious situation we're in, and there's a lot of people's money riding on the line on here, what happens. And as long as the whole sector, for say, doesn't panic here and go into liquidation mode, you know, hopefully we can come out of this okay. But the defeat of that bill suggests that hopefully maybe they'll try to come up with a secondary vote if possible. If not, they're just going to have to come up with another package plan. I don't think the American people is going to let them go home on recess here until they come to some type of plan here to combat the financial situation we're in.
While I have real-time quotes for the grains and the oil seeds, my Dow is 15 minutes delayed. What do you see at this point? I've got it down.
We have the Dow futures down 587 points, the S&P futures down over 80 points. So we have been drifting a little lower here. Gold futures are up over $34 an ounce. So we're still seeing some liquidation in an index as a general, and more movement toward flight to quality. Bonds are up over 2 points also. Two, when you look at the big picture here, the Dow and the stock market in general, is the financial sector taking a pretty good hit, or the concern? Hopefully these other sectors can hold in there to help stabilize.
Well, is there anything a producer needs to do besides watch this from the sidelines at the point?
Well, if you're one that needs some cash and need to make some sales, you know, this could get a lot more serious. By all means, may consider cashing in a little bit here if you need some cash flow needs. But if you're sort of a sold up and where you want to be, we're still inclined to look at the long-term fundamental picture where we can record some type of low here and move higher as we go into winter. So it's a matter to look at your own personal situation. And there's even ways to come in some puts and calls to cover you both ways, too. So this is a time to look at your own situation and act accordingly, Todd.
Speaking on the low, of the low, corn, while it did not put in new lows for the day, soybeans did move into new lows since the early summer, well, the late summer low, and then, of course, the highs that we had earlier in the year. Much downside potential left in that marketplace, and is this where you have more problems? Well, why the difference between the corn and the soybeans other than the limit stop the corn?
Well, on the beans, we see in bean harvest pick up. There's ideas these beans could provide some harvest pressure in here. Also, too, beans heavily speculative traded, limit some buying interest there as investors slip out. But, too, the bean oil down limit most of the day from sharply lower crude oil values. We've seen world energy values drop, and so that sort of spilled over into the bean sector. The next point on the charts, technically, for the November beans would be the lows we made back there in April, right before the big flood concerns, the 1045 level. That'll be the next spot there to keep an eye on, Todd.
All right. Thank you very much.
Very good.
That's Kirk Kimmel. He's with Grainfield, or rather with Bates Commodities out of Normal, Illinois. Joins us here on the Closing Mark Report. Happens each and every Monday afternoon.
Agricultural programs are made possible by First Midwest Bank, serving Illinois' agricultural community with locations in Champaign, Danville, Galesburg, Morris, and McHenry. More information is available from Bob Baisdefer in Danville at 217-477-6016. First Midwest Bank, member FDIC, an equal housing lender.
Dave Dickey is near now. He has a complete look at today's agricultural news.
In agricultural news, in a nearly 40-minute vote, the U.S. House of Representatives today defeated a $700 billion bailout plan of Wall Street. The 228-205 vote against the financial markets bill, H.R. 3997, included 95 Democrats and 133 Republicans. Despite an impassioned plea from House GOP Minority Leader John Bonar to pass the measure, the bill would have authorized an immediate $250 billion infusion to take sour assets off the books, $100 billion more if the president certified it was necessary, and a final $350 billion on presidential certification and congressional approval. The bill would have also created an oversight board to review the plan's effectiveness and a regulatory oversight panel. USDA scientists are saying climate change could impact farming over the next three decades. Jerry Hatfield says the potential of severe droughts and the possibility that more pests will overwinter could lead to reduction in crop yields.
If we look at corn production, we're talking about a 7% decrease. And if you look at cotton production, we're talking about a 5%. Probably one of the biggest dramatic ones is about a 10 to 12% reduction in rice yields, because where they're growing right now in the southern tier of the United States is going to become warmer. As it becomes warmer, it's really that reproductive stage that is most impacted on that. So there are actually numbers that really are quite concerning.
USDA scientist Jerry Hatfield. USDA is telling farm state lawmakers it is unable to implement the disaster assistance program as Congress intended until some questions and some issues are addressed. It may be some of those questions could be resolved through a 20-page technical corrections bill being prepared in the Senate. The U.S. Grain Council's annual China corn tour estimates the country's 2008 corn crop at 153.5 million metric tons, a 1% increase over 2007, but about 2% lower than estimated by China's government. The tour pegged a national average yield of 84 bushels to the acre. And USDA says it will not allow a mixed origin label on meat if only U.S. origin cattle are processed in a single day. Country of origin labeling begins on Wednesday. And that's a look at today's agricultural news.
Hey, thanks, Dave. Dave Dickey is Director of Agricultural Programming at WILL, Public Radio for the Farming World.
The Closing Market Report is made possible by AgriGold Hybrids, funding agricultural programming as an additional service to the many AgriGold customers in the AM580 listening area. AgriGold, the corn specialists. More information is at AgriGold.com or at 800-262-7333.
I'm University of Illinois Extension's Todd Gleason, the host of the Closing Market Report and Commodity Week. You can listen to both of those programs online anytime you'd like at willag.org. That's WILLAG.org. There you'll also find things like USDA's quarterly grain stocks numbers. They'll be posted by 7:35 or so tomorrow morning if you'd like to visit WILLAG.org to see them. And there's an easy-to-use subscription link for our weekend newsletter. It's over on the right-hand side of the page at WILLAG.org. Now up next, the National Safety Council is reminding farmers and ranchers to take care during the harvest season. I'll have more on the nation's most dangerous job. Farming is dangerous. Nationwide, 715 people died last year in farm-related accidents. That fact, along with the 80,000 disabling injuries the National Farm Safety Council tallied in 2007, make agriculture the number one most dangerous industry in the nation. And while the numbers have gotten better over recent years, farm safety specialists are worried about the late harvest season this fall. It means farmers and farm workers will be pushed and consequently tired. That's when fatal mistakes happen, says University of Illinois Extension specialist Bob Aharon.
That they get out and start pushing themselves very hard, maybe working 10, 12, 14 or more hours a day, getting less than 6 hours or so sleep a night, and not taking very many breaks. And what that does, it physically fatigues us. And when we become physically fatigued, it causes mental fatigue. It can lead us to making mistakes we normally wouldn't do if we were well rested and had taken a break every 2 to 3 hours. And it's important to do that sort of thing because if you're not mentally alert with the kind of things we deal with around farms, the kind of machines that are fast-moving, powered by very powerful engines, that if we get caught in them or something, it's going to be relentless, usually, and results in pretty serious injuries and many times death.
The 2006 death rate for farmers and farm employees was 28 in 100,000, according to the U.S. Bureau of Labor Statistics. The 2006 injury rate for farmers and farm employees was 6 in 100. Scientific research shows the best way to avoid becoming one of those statistics is to get a good night's rest, 6 to 8 hours of sleep.
If you get less than that, you open yourself to higher risk of making mental mistakes that can result in injuries.
Or death. The point is simple. When the crop finally matures, those souls bringing in the harvest need to stop every couple of hours and take a 15-minute break. And to get off the tractor or the combine at night and to go to bed and to go to sleep for 6 to 8 hours. For University of Illinois Extension, I'm Todd Gleason.
Agricultural programs are made possible by First Midwest Bank, serving Illinois' agricultural community with locations in Champaign, Danville, Galesburg, Morris, and McHenry. More information is available from Doug Slayton in Galesburg at 309-341-5003. First Midwest Bank, member FDIC, an equal housing lender.
You're listening to the Closing Market Report on a Monday afternoon. Time to take a look at the cash grain market and the folks from the Andersons right here in Champaign County. On the line with us today is Brian Stark. Good afternoon to you, Brian.
Good afternoon, Todd.
Let's start with the harvest season. Where do we stand here in Champaign County and the
surrounding
area?
Well, I would say that right now you're seeing a few more beans being cut here the last week or so. Corn, it's taken a while for it to dry down. We haven't seen much new crop corn come out of the fields. What we have seen has been good above expectation yield-wise, but it's early. I would say less than, 5% of corn has even been touched in central Illinois, and the same for beans. We're just getting a good start, but early indications yields have been pretty good.
Pretty good being 50s?
I would 60s? Say anywhere from 55 to 62 bushel. Has covered some of the early beans. Now, keep in mind, we figured that the early beans would probably be better. Some of the later beans that got planted late could still have a chance to not be as good going forward because they're still a couple weeks out, I guess, from being mature. So that fact of a frost chance could still bite them, although we're getting to a point now where it just may not matter. But earlier beans have been pretty good.
Because of the size of your operation, I guess we'd consider you a regional elevator, pull from a lot of areas. Who's in which direction are they harvesting most of the crop at this point?
I would say to the north. Northern third, they didn't have as much rain as we did in the central third and southern third of the state this spring. So the northern third's probably further along in getting started. Beans are a little bit drier, 9, 10% compared to 12, 13, 14% on some of the beans that are mature around here. So they're a little bit ahead of the game, but I think eventually we'll get to that point where everybody's going hard here, hopefully in the next week to 10 days.
So those numbers, are those the good numbers coming out of those areas that they were drier early in the season, but they had a very dry period. Are those good numbers that are coming out of that?
The Peoria area has been very good. In northern Iroquois County, as you go north and then towards the Quad Cities, yeah, they've been dry. The bean yields have been a little more inconsistent, but corn, surprisingly enough, 200-plus in a lot of areas. Keep in mind, though, very small sample, but what we have heard has been good. Surprising, but yet again, a lot of the farmers we've been talking to point to the genetics in the corn.
Well, there's a lot of harvest season yet to go. We'll see how it holds up as the later in the season we get and the later that got planted.
Sure, sure.
Okay, so what are your cash bids for the day?
Cash bids for today were 473 for corn. January would be 496. Cash soybeans 1029, and January's 1045.
Usually we're done at this time, but we're not quite done yet. How much? How do you see the cash grain flow coming up in the next week or 2 weeks?
Especially, well, I think as movement starts to occur, you're going to see basis kind of fall under a little bit of pressure just because of the seasonal times. But the fact that the board is under so much pressure right now with the outside markets and given all the stuff going on in the economy, it'll be interesting to see if the basis kind of fights that, because the producer's a tight holder, and the lower it goes, the more confident they get and things have to bounce back, whether that's right or wrong. So basis may have some work to do later on to generate movement, but it should come under some seasonal pressure here in the next few weeks.
Okay, anything else to add before I let you go for the
day? That'll be all. Hopefully we'll get something passed in the White House or the Congress here, and we can get the panic selling slowed down just a little bit in all the markets.
All right, thanks much.
Thanks.
Brian Stark is with the Andersons, joins us from the Champaign County Elevator. Each and every Monday, somebody from that office joins us right here on the Closing Market Report. In 2 minutes, we'll take a complete look at the agricultural weather forecast. The folks from Chesapeake Energy will be with us. And then after that, Daryl Ray of APAC, that's the Agricultural Policy Analysis Center out of the University of Tennessee, will join us for the second half hour, the Harvest Hour edition of the Closing Market Report.
With this look at AM 580 News, I'm Tom Rogers. Two downstate Illinois Republicans voted against the $700 billion federal bailout of the financial sector this afternoon as the bill failed. Tim Johnson and John Chimkus cast no votes. Johnson had said that the bailout would have sent the wrong message about responsibility for the meltdown in the mortgage-based security market. Fellow Republican Ray LaHood and Democrat Phil Hare both voted in favor of the bill, which attracted mixed support and opposition across party lines. Republican Jerry Weller was the lone House member not to cast a vote. Members of Indiana's delegation split on the emergency rescue package as well. Congressman Steve Bouyer, Mike Pence, and Dan Burton opposed it, as did Democrats Barron Hill and Pete Visklosky. But another Democrat, freshman Brad Ellsworth, supported the plan. A $500,000 gift will help Urbana's Cunningham Children's Home eventually replace some outdated buildings on its campus. Richard and Roseanne Knoll officially gave Cunningham's largest grant in its history this morning. The couple were inspired by a campaign launched by former Illinois men's basketball coach Lou Henson and one of his star players, Kendall Gill. The president of Cunningham says the goal is to raise $8 million to build a new school and recreational facility. A former Bolingbroke police officer says he doesn't know why a polygraph shows that he was deceptive in answering questions about his wife's disappearance. Drew Peterson is a suspect in last October's disappearance of his wife, Stacy. He denies wrongdoing. He took two lie detector tests for an upcoming book. They'd indicated he had been deceptive in answering three questions. They focused on the last time Peterson saw his wife, whether he knows where she is, and whether she told him she was leaving. Peterson's attorney says he doesn't think polygraphs are reliable, but the Petersons show he hasn't done anything wrong. The entire Illinois River is back in business to recreational traffic. The Coast Guard has reopened a 20-mile stretch of the river that had been closed for more than a week because it had become swollen by the remnants of Hurricane Ike. The affected stretch had extended from Cass County north to Schuyler County. The entire river had already been open to commercial traffic. I'm Tom Rogers, AM 580 News.
And I'm Todd Gleason. You're listening to the Closing Market Report. Time to take a look at the agricultural weather forecast. On the line with us from Chesapeake Energy in Chicago is Josh Starr. Hi, Josh. How are you today?
Good afternoon. How are you doing?
Oh, well, I'm not too bad. A little rainfall here at one point during the day, but things have cleared out nicely.
Yeah, it's we have this wave coming through, which is putting down, amounts of quarter to half inch across portions of Illinois. That will kick out here later today. And behind that, we have pretty tranquil weather. We don't see any freeze potential out in the forecast here for the next 10 days across the vast majority of the Midwest. The only areas where you could possibly see an isolated reading below freezing would be in the far northern portions of the Midwest. We're talking South Dakota, Minnesota, in Wisconsin, and those aren't the southern areas of those states. Those are the central and northern areas. So overall, pretty tranquil pattern here for coming up for the first portion of October.
And then if you take a look at the western growing regions where they're trying to sow still a winter wheat crop, what do you see?
Well, there's a front coming through in about a week's time that will put some rainfall across that portion of the belt. However, rainfall totals are not going to be appreciable, and we've actually had a rather dry streak here, so several rain events would be beneficial for that crop.
And how about around the rest of the globe?
Tell you what, two areas of focus. Argentina had a rain event over the weekend that dropped a good rainfall across the summer crop corn and soybean belt of Argentina, which is needed given the dryness they've had over the past several months. Also dropped some rainfall across the winter wheat belt, although the dryness issues there have already started to trim yields. The other area is South Australia, where we saw temperatures above 95 degrees Fahrenheit over the weekend, and that may have resulted in some trimming of the wheat crop in that portion of the Australian belt. But by and large, the rest of Australia is actually in very good shape compared to the past several years.
Speaking of being in good shape, it appears from what I saw from the U.S. Grains Council, the Global Grains Council, that the Chinese corn crop was in awfully good shape. And are they going to have good weather to harvest it?
They sure are. China, you really couldn't have asked for better weather this entire summer. And looking ahead, the pattern is somewhat variable from a temperature standpoint, but we don't see any significant rain outbreaks or bitterly cold temperatures. So overall, the harvest conditions in China also look very favorable.
And then why don't you come back home for me just a bit, because we talked about that cold weather, but you could expand on it just a little bit and tell me where the coldest places across the Midwest might be.
Sure. It generally focuses on a trough of low pressure moving over the northern Great Lakes this weekend. High pressure comes in over the belt thereafter, kind of Saturday, Sunday time frame. But the high pressure really is a southern Canada feature, so you really have to stretch to get any freezing temps. And if you get them, we think they're going to be isolated areas in portions of central Minnesota, central Wisconsin, and maybe the UP and northern parts of Michigan. So you're really talking fringe acreage of the belt. Everyone else stays above freezing, and there's no signs of freeze out on the horizon. This is now getting behind climatology.
Okay, thanks much. We appreciate you being with us this
afternoon.
All right,
thank you.
All right. Josh Darr is with Chesapeake Energy out of Chicago, Illinois. He joins us here on the Closing Market Report. That one happens each and every Monday afternoon to take a look at the agricultural weather forecast. We'll say goodbye to some of our listeners now. For the rest of you who will be with us for the Harvest Hour edition, Daryl Ray should join us from the Agricultural Policy Analysis Center at the University of Tennessee. During the Harvest Hour edition of the Closing Market Report, I'm Todd Gleason. You're listening to the Harvest Hour edition of the Closing Market Report. I'm Todd Gleason. We'll start, as we always do, with a quick look at what's been happening on Wall Street. Tough day, not on Wall Street, well, on Wall Street, but as well as in Washington, D.C. Bill Burnside is with us. Hi, Bill.
Hi, Todd. It looks like quite a day again after the House rejected the bailout plan, 208 versus 228 against, narrow defeat of it, but it's going to go back to the drawing board, and as a result, we're down 684 points on the Dow. The NASDAQ is down 173. The S&P 500 is down 95.30. And we've got the 10-year Treasury now at a 3.63 after being at a 3.79 at weekend. 6,104,000,000 shares traded on the New York Stock Exchange. We've got declines leading advances 94% to 5%. There's only 190 advances on the New York Stock Exchange. 3,334 issues have declined and only 15 are unchanged. So quite a thing with Wachovia biting the dust to Citibank. Morgan Stanley's 20% has been bought out by Mitsubishi's unit today, and all kinds of news is frightening people to pieces. So that's what's happening on Wall Street at the present time. This has been Bill Burnside of the William C. Burnside Company at 111 North Vermillion in Danville. Thank you for listening to me on WILL.
Thanks much, Bill. Bill Burnside of the William C. Burnside and Company in Danville joins us here on the Closing Market Report on a Monday afternoon. Dr. Daryl Ray, the chair of the University of Tennessee Ag Policy Analysis Center, or APAC for short, is on hand with us this afternoon. APAC, at least its staff, has written in the About section of the APAC website at agpolicy.org, says that it works to understand how core issues affect the day-to-day and long-term operations of farms, including those policies set by Congress and the executive branch and implemented by USDA and US EPA. Dr. Ray, thank you for being with us this afternoon and taking the time today.
Glad to be with you.
Well, let's start with the 2008 Farm Bill. It's a unique by default, I suppose, because the president vetoed it a couple of times. Uh-huh. Still, it's the law, and that makes implementation an interesting question as it pertains to the intent of Congress and how the executive office guides that the implementing agencies. In this case, USDA and US EPA. You've written about this and talked to your students there at UT about it. Can you give me some examples?
Well, there are really three examples that come to mind. One is with ACRE, the new revenue-based counter-cyclical program. The way I understand that Congress wanted it to work was you were to take the average of the previous two crop year prices to set the price, and it's supposed to start in 2009. Well, it isn't available for the 2008 crop, but available for the 2009 crop. And so that would mean that you would be using the prices for the two previous marketing years according to the legislation. But USDA didn't like the idea that rather than taking a five-year Olympic average, that is the 5 years with the highest and lowest taken out, Congress decided to use 2 years. And so they are trying to get folks to, or their interpretation and the way they would like to administer it, let's put it that way, is to not use the 2008, but go back one more year. So it'd be crop year 2006 and 2007. And they feel that that would be less costly for the taxpayer. And of course, those in Congress that were part of doing the legislation, and the commodity folks
and the farm organizations there. They're saying that isn't the way we want it, and they're not liking it.
Yeah, well, this highlights what happens, and I suppose it doesn't happen very often when the administration doesn't like, in this case, a piece of farm legislation. I say it doesn't happen very often because I don't remember the last time an administration vetoed a farm bill.
No.
But that really, then you get into a secondary battle after the fact as to what the implementation is like, and it's the executive branch who has much more control over that. Is there anything that Congress can or does do or tries to do, and examples that Congress can do to make the make the agencies implement the way it feels like it should be implemented?
Yes, they can. And, of course, you know, they do have control over the purse strings, too. So they have a number of ways that they can do it. One of the other examples is the 10-acre rule. And this was a rule that was put in to essentially knock out those folks that were hobby farmers. But in the process of explaining the rule in the conference committee, the folks that put the bill together said that it was fine if a farmer had more than one 10-acre plot and wanted to combine those 10-acre plots, he then would be eligible for the farm program. And if you didn't have 10 acres and you didn't have that situation, then you wouldn't. Well, USDA decided that they wanted to make it such that if it was a 10-acre plot, it wouldn't be eligible. Well, Congress, and I think it's maybe just the House now, but there is legislation that's being put into place, or at least being debated, I probably should say,
mm-hmm.
that would go ahead and require the USDA to do that specifically. So they can come back with legislation that is more pointed and make it and hopefully, you know, get what they want. But it is quite interesting. Of course, the COOL is another one, and that's been around since 2002, and it's still there's still some work that's being done on exactly how to administer that. One of the things that the interim rules that they had set up made it sound like that, you know, just about anything that came through a processing plant could be labeled as from North America, that is, from Canada, U.S., and Mexico, if there had been processing of livestock or cattle from any of those three areas in the last 60 days. Well, that isn't the way the legislation was written, and so there was a lot of consternation about that. And now I think they've rewritten it according to what I see on the web, and it sounds like if there is a livestock item that went through the line during that day, then they could say it was from Mexico or Canada or you know, from North America. But if it was only from the U.S. during that batch that day, well, then they would have to say the U.S. And that's a way of getting around it. But you know, I'm not in the meat processing industry. But even to me, it would occur to me that I could keep a pen of Canadian and Mexican cattle on the premises, and you know, put one or two of those in each day, and get around that if I was so inclined.
Mm-hmm. Let's take up some of the other issues that you've been tackling there at APAC at the University of Tennessee in recent months. And I did go to your website and picked off a couple of things that you have written.
Uh-huh.
One's called Washington Consensus Phase 2. The other is about the World Bank and studies beginning to acknowledge the elephants in the global living room. Which one would you like to take up?
They're somewhat related. I think that we have over time kind of developed a father knows best kind of attitude with developing nations, that you know, you have to do what we say, and if you don't, we won't loan you money, and we don't really care what your specific situation is. We're going to give you the same recipe no matter what, and those recipes are somewhat hard for them to handle. They include such things as privatizing many of the industries, and some of those industries aren't even privatized in the U.S., such as waterworks and that kind of thing. Having going for free markets getting the government out of various kinds of activities and other kinds of things that are good, except that perhaps are not really that appropriate at the particular stage of development of that country, or shouldn't or couldn't be done quite as quickly as they would want it to be. And I think that we're recognizing now that, that some of those things are probably too pat, and that we need to take into account the situation in the individual country. And one of the reasons for that is because it hasn't been working all that well. Many of the countries that we haven't been involved in with that kind of a prescription by the World Bank or IMF, such as China and other countries in the Asia, have been growing very quickly, and the countries that we have been using that prescription haven't done as well.
Well, why does this involve agriculture in the United States in any way?
Well, agriculture, I think, is important for us to understand that growing other countries' income is going to make markets available to agriculture in the long run. And if we don't do it right, why, we probably are going to suffer the consequences in agriculture as well as in other ways.
You cite something from the Economist Voice, an article that, and you'll have to forgive me, an economist from Harvard and the John F. Kennedy School of Government. I think the name is Danny Roderick, but I'm not sure that that's pronounced right. Why did you do that, and what does he say that you found of interest?
Well, he was saying that he thought that we ought to recognize that economics are extremely important, but other kinds of considerations sometimes come into the decision makers of countries, not just, you know, not just developing countries, but our country as well, and that we need to try to assimilate and come up with a more holistic kind of approach to dealing with other countries rather than one that is only based on income, because sometimes that income isn't distributed all that equally. And, you know, we can increase the per capita incomes, but if only 5% of them are getting the income, and, of course, you divide by any population number, it looks like it's the per capita incomes are increasing. But actually, you might have a very polarized situation in terms of income. So he's thinking that we need to look at these countries individually and help them get to the point that they can get to a takeoff stage. And each of them may have a little different help they need rather than a standard one that we apply to everybody.
Well, what kind of prescription would you prescribe then for developing these nations so that agricultural markets could at some point over the long term come out of them and there might be exports from the U.S. to them?
Well, I think that we have to recognize that many countries have a large proportion of their population in agriculture. And it's going to take a while for the job opportunities in cities to catch up. So that if you do things too quickly, you would put a bunch of folks out of work. So and essentially increase the size of slums in many of the cities. So I think you have to help them become educated, get as best you can, you know, work on infrastructure, work on education, work on making them more productive. And as there are jobs that are available in the cities that can pull the folks off more gradually rather than real quickly, I think that is going to be our best bet. In some ways, you know, Russia did a shock treatment on theirs, and you know, and everything kind of fell apart. But other countries like Asia are trying to do it more gradually.
We'll continue our conversation in just 2 minutes, okay?
Okay.
Darrell Ray is with the Agricultural Policy Analysis Center at the University of Tennessee. Joins us here on the Harvest Hour edition of the Closing Mark Report. More with Darrell Ray in just 2 minutes.
WILL programs are made possible by Pages for All Ages, books, music, cafe, and DVDs in Savoy. A locally owned independent bookstore, Pages' goal is to provide a full-service store with a comfortable setting for customers' enjoyment. In Savoy or on the web at www.pagesforallages.com.
Here's what the weather forecast for the two-state region, Illinois and Indiana, looks like, as provided by our own chief meteorologist, Ed Kieser. He says tonight in Illinois, skies will be mostly cloudy, a few scattered showers during the evening, then clearing overnight. In Indiana, mostly cloudy, scattered showers primarily before midnight. Lows will range from 45 in northwestern Illinois to 56 in the south. Tomorrow, a mix of clouds and sunshine, breezy and cooler. A chance of a few showers in northern Indiana. Highs tomorrow from 60 in northern Illinois to 70 in the south. The extended forecast says cooler weather is arriving. High temps on Wednesday are expected to be mostly in the upper 50s and 60s, and the 60s and 70s on Thursdays. Lows on Wednesday, Thursday, and Friday morning should mostly be in the 40s. In a few of those normally colder spots in the very far northern reaches of the two-state area, a few lows in the mid to the upper 30s areas are possible. No widespread frost or freeze expected this week. A moderation in temperature expected late into the weekend, and dry weather expected Wednesday through Saturday with a chance of showers again and thunderstorms returning on Sunday of this coming week.
Today's programs are made possible with support from the Champaign County Humane Society, promoting animal welfare since 1951. Pet adoptions are available from the Humane Society, a proud member of Community Shares of Illinois, a choice for payroll donation at work, on the web at cs-il.org.
You're listening to the Closing Marker Report. This is the Harvest Hour edition. We're talking with agricultural policy expert from APAC. That's the Agricultural Policy Analysis Center at the University of Tennessee. The chair's name is Daryl Ray. Daryl, thanks for being with us again this afternoon. Let's continue our conversation about agricultural policy. What are the new issues you see developing over the next decade?
I think that we will be moving towards more concentration and focus on conservation and the environment than we have in the last decade, although we've made many movements in that direction already. But I think that we are still in a situation where stability of the agricultural sector is something that we have to be concerned about. At one time, agriculture's productivity and overcapacity, we would say, was often due to the developed countries like the U.S. and Canada and Australia and EU. But now we're in a time in which supplies are tight, and we know that part of that is due to the increase in ethanol demand. Some of the other reasons include reductions in output in certain countries. But I think that with the kinds of prices that we've seen over the last 18 months or 2 years, we're going to see a lot of increase in acreage in places like the Ukraine and Brazil, and it's going to encourage productivity and research for technological advance in various countries. So, and we also know that the private sector is very much into increasing the yields for corn and other commodities. So I think that in the future we have to worry about the productivity and maybe even excess productivity, but it's not necessarily as much created by the developed world as it is by the developing world, such as Brazil and other countries around the world. So I know I hear people say that, we won't have to worry about low prices anymore. We're at a different plateau. And that could be true, especially if inflation hits the rest of the economy and stays there. But I wouldn't necessarily say that will occur, and of course we have a lot of increase in input costs that even if prices do stay fairly high, but not as high as they have been, yields are going to have to increase substantially in order for farmers to have a net income that is reasonable. So I think we're going to continue to have some of the same problems that we've had historically. But I think we'll probably move more towards environmental concerns as well.
Well, and will that be necessitated if the rest of the world, for instance, if Ukraine and other places were able to ramp up, and I don't know whether I'd say dramatically, but to increase to their potential in previous years, would that by necessity mean that there needs to be a way to put green payments into the U.S. farm economy to sustain it?
It's possible that would be one way of handling it. I guess it depends on how serious the ups and downs are. I worry that, you know, with the tremendous increases that we've seen in prices for major commodities, that we're going to be paying for it dearly in 4 or 5 years. And if the prices get down into the levels that we've seen, you know, not that long ago, of $1.50 corn and, you know, $4 wheat or $4 soybeans or even lower, I'm not sure that there will be any green payments or direct payments that would be large enough to offset that kind of reduction in revenue. So I think it would be a combination probably of some of the efforts that have been made before plus green payments. Now, if it's a relatively balanced situation in terms of supply and demand over time, then I would think that we could move more to the kinds of the payments that we see in Europe. But I'm not sure that that's a guaranteed situation.
So on your thoughts then, the cycles back and forth would be cycling to the bottom side potentially for the farm economy, but that it wouldn't be related at all to the food v. fuel debate in terms of there would be plenty of room because of overproduction for corn to be continued to use for ethanol. Is that right?
To some extent. But, you know, I guess I do think that that corn is kind of a stepping stone. We'll have to see if that's true, but I suspect that with all the money that is being put into the cellulosic effort, that we will probably see before as long as, you know, maybe sooner than some would expect, increases in volume and, in terms of making it more efficient to use cellulose as a form of feedstock for ethanol. So I kind of suspect that, you know, the use of corn for ethanol is going to level off in about 2 years, probably stay there unless we see, you know, tremendous cost reductions with cellulose. But I suspect that it'll stay fairly flat, and then in order to reach the kind of mandated levels that we have after that will probably require cellulose to make up the difference.
It's been a pleasure to talk with you this afternoon.
Enjoyed it a great deal.
We'll look forward to having another conversation in the future. Dr. Darrell Ray is with the University of Tennessee, where he chairs the Agricultural Policy Analysis Center. You can visit them online. The address is agpolicy.org if you'd like to see what the Ag Policy Agricultural Center is up to and read some more from Dr. Darrell Ray. You've been listening to the Harvest Hour edition of the Closing Market Report. I'm Todd Gleason. We'll talk with you again tomorrow.